If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Tonight on Blackhawks Live, a new season, different faces, and the drive to win.
Jones nice slot, fires, pants it, rebound, score! Connor Bedard, Donato to Nazar over the blue line, down the slot, he shoots, he scores! Frank Nazar on a breakaway!
Join Charlie Remiliotis as he dives into what's next for the Hawks. Here's Charlie.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
Welcome into Blackhawks Live. Charlie Remiliotis here. We are back from our little two-week hiatus because of the Four Nations Tournament. And as always, Jack Heinrich is riding shotgun with me. Jack, what is going on, man?
I'm glad we're back. Nice little break, but good to have hockey back.
Thanks for filling in for me on Saturday in Columbus. I know it was a very long post-game show and not much positives to talk about from that game. But I appreciate you pinch-hitting for me. You did a great job. And yeah, it's good to be back here with you.
Yeah, thanks. It's always fun. That was a beast, but we got through it.
We did get through it. We got a fun show here planned. We'll talk about the latest happenings over the last few days in Blackhawks land leading up, or actually, I should say the last week or so since the Blackhawks returned from the break. Second segment after, we're going to talk about Seth Jones and obviously his comments kind of informally requesting a trade out of Chicago with 5 years left on his contract. We'll share our thoughts on that. And hopefully the last segment, we're also going to put a bow on the Four Nations tournament. But let's start out with the first two games right out of the break, Columbus and Toronto. And I don't really want to spend too much time breaking down what actually happened in the games, just because we've already rehashed that. Jack obviously rehashed it on the post-game show against Columbus. Or after Columbus, I did it on the pregame show, then the postgame show against Toronto. So I more so want to talk about that there were two controversial challenges in both games. This Saturday game against Columbus, the Hawks fell behind 1-0, and they thought they tied the game at 1-1 when Connor Bedard scores the goal, ends up getting immediately waved off. The Blackhawks decide not to challenge it because it seemed like there was a discrepancy in what the original call on the ice actually was. And then obviously Sunday's yesterday, while it did not have any bearing on the outcome whatsoever, there was a controversial challenge that led to the officials being booed off the ice at the United Center last night. So let's start in the Columbus one. The Connor Bedard, the overturned goal. When Blackhawks interim head coach Anders Sorensen was asked about this specifically after the game, he had said they didn't get clarification yet on the officials whether or not it got ruled off because of a kicking motion or if it was goalie interference. And after it got to Chicago's bench that it was a goalie interference, the Hawks had a really tight turnaround on whether they actually wanted to challenge it or not. They decided not to. And I thought in real time, They probably should have, just because it looked like the puck was trickling through the legs of Elvis Merzlikins before Connor Bedard's right skate made contact with the left pad of Merzlikins. And so I thought maybe the Blackhawks had a challengeable play there, but I don't fault Sorensen or his coaching staff for not challenging, because the Hawks had fell behind 1-0. If they lose the challenge there, then you have to go on the penalty kill, and if Columbus scores there, they make a 2-0, and then it's just an unnecessary, now the Hawks are trying to climb out of a hole. And so I thought it was interesting, though, that, the Blackhawks, I don't know, I think what bothered me the most was how quickly the officials were to wave it off. Like, for me, I think if it's 50-50, you just kind of let it happen and let the challenge of the opposing team actually proved that it wasn't a goal versus it was a goal. And then later on in the Toronto game on Sunday against the Leafs, Toronto scores the empty netter. The Hawks challenge for offside. And Jack, we were watching it. It felt like, so Troy and John immediately were like, oh, that's offside. It's going to get overturned. But the longer the officials had the headset on, the more I was like, okay, I think we might be missing something. And as we were digging into the video, you had to really crunch it down to John Tavares was, he pushed the puck over the blue line, and when it reconnected with his stick blade is when William Nylander tagged up behind him. And so it's kind of a by definition, it was the right call, but both of those calls went against the Blackhawks when it felt like, I think, again, right call in Toronto, maybe the right call for Chicago not to challenge the Columbus, but it's unfortunate when you see these overturn calls or these challenges not go Chicago's way. And again, didn't have any sort of impact on the actual outcome against Toronto, but it did get me thinking about if there are moments like this in the playoffs, how would they rule it and what kind of controversy would come from it?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed pretty clear. I actually kind of stopped looking at the TV. I was wondering what was taking so long. I was downstairs.
Oh yeah, that's right. You went downstairs.
Yeah, I went downstairs and I was just like, what? Like, what is going on? Like, because, I mean, Anders said after the game, it's like we had nothing to lose. Like, we're trying to keep it a two-goal game, I think.
Right.
So, it's a weird rule. I guess he explained it. Anders explained it after the game. But, yeah, I think in the playoffs, that would explode a lot more than a 5-2 game at the United Center. But in the playoffs, everyone would be like, don't know about that one.
Yeah, and it did, the Tavares one specifically resembled the Cale Makar play from a few years ago in the playoffs against Edmonton. And essentially, the rule by definition is the correct rule. So like they call it the rule book, which is cool. But I think optically it looked weird because Tavares was skating the puck over the blue line. And at no point did he ever turn to look over his shoulder to see if William Nylander was actually tagging up. And TSN cameras actually caught William Nylander on the Toronto bench mouthing, I thought for sure I was offside. So the fact that the players are even kind of up in the air about it, it kind of tells you a lot. And the NHL is coming off the popularity of the Four Nations tournament. So if you're a casual fan that's trying to get into hockey now and you watch a controversial play like that, it looks like offside, but then when you like really get to the nitty gritty, it's like, oh, okay, well, that was the right call, but I don't know if anyone understands what happened. And I mentioned the Connor Bedard, the overturned goal. My point too, and we saw this last night too, it was Dallas in New York. The New York Islanders thought they scored to tie it up at 4-4 in the third period, but the officials immediately waved off the game tying goal with 6 minutes left. I think it was 6.5 minutes left. And probably if it went the other way, if it was a good goal, I think if Dallas would have challenged, the call would have maybe stood. And so I think my point, there was a play earlier a few weeks ago where Nick Foligno's goal got taken off the board because of a goalie interference that the official immediately spotted. And I remember talking to Nick Foligno the next day and I was like, what was the explanation that you got? And he shared it, but he was like, he's like, if the official caught that in real time, he's the best official in the league because it was really ticky-tacky and you really have had to crunch the number or had to crunch the video to see if it was actually goalie interference. And so my point is the challenges should be there to prove that it was not a goal, not that it was a goal. Like that's mm-hmm. what the motive of a challenge should be. And so if you're an on-ice official and you're calling it, even if you think it's really close to not being goalie interference, just call it a good goal and then have the team challenge it to overturn it if they feel very strongly that it was goalie interference. But the fact that we're trying to prove whether or not it was a goal shouldn't be the motive of the overall challenge.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's just so hard because you're right. It was a quick wave off on Saturday. And you couldn't really tell until the replay what it was. So it wouldn't make sense that you just call something like that a goal. And then, like you said, you challenge it to be like, oh, no, it's not a goal. That's how it should work. But, yeah, with replay in all sports, there's pros and cons. Like college basketball makes the game so much longer at the end of the game, so they look at everything. So,
right.
But they want to get it right. But, I mean, there has to be a balance in between for all sports with it.
Yeah. All right. I'll get off my soapbox now. The two games, Columbus, Toronto, overall, Hawks got outscored 10-3 in those games. Disappointing results in both of the games because the Hawks had three practices, a full morning skate. You thought they might turn in a better effort. Unfortunately, it doesn't go the way that the results don't go the way that they want. And now it's kind of like back to square one of the final 2 months of the season or less than 2 months of the season. The one noteworthy storyline that came in last night's game was Lucas Reichel not seeing the ice in the third period, or is like the final 6 minutes of the second. It was a coach's decision for him not to play. Anders Sorensen, you were obviously in that media availability. He said didn't like his game, and it did generate a lot of discussion about, well, why is Lucas Reichel being benched, but other players among the forwards aren't? If because it's not like Reichel was the only one that wasn't going. And here's my stance. I think Lucas Reichel has been given a lot of opportunity by Chicago over the last few years to prove that he could be a piece long-term on this Blackhawks roster. And so I think the organization is holding him to a higher standard, basically saying to him, hey, if you want to be a piece long-term, play a top six role, top nine role, whatever it is, consistently on this team, we need more from you. And if you're Pat Maroon or Craig Smith, you're veteran, you know what you're going to get out of them. And if they're not performing the way that the coaching staff expects them to perform, sure, you can probably scratch them or bench them, but I don't think it would be as meaningful because you could probably say that for a lot of guys. Having said that, you do risk the possibility of, if you're not holding others accountable, specifically the veterans, that maybe the young guys will see that and say, well, what the heck? This doesn't feel like we're being graded on the same level. But I do think it's indicative of Sorensen's relationship with Reichel, knowing that he has spent time with him in Rockford. I remember when Sorensen got hired as the Blackhawks interim head coach, Lucas had said he had a lot of tough conversations with Sorensen in Rockford, both good and bad, about his game. And so I think this is probably one of those instances where Sorensen and Reichel, maybe Sorensen has told Lucas what he wants out of what he wants more out of him. And if he's not delivering that standard, Sorensen is going to hold him accountable, because Reichel is one of those guys that he has a lot to prove to be part of the next great Blackhawks team. If he really wants to be, you know, if he really has to elevate his game to be part of that conversation.
Yeah. And I can see the fans' perspective, because they're like, well, why is this guy? And I mean, Reichel's kind of a polarizing player as well. A lot of people are like, he's young and he can be good. And still believe in the talent. I mean, you can see the talent. Some people are just kind of like, oh, you know, it's whatever. But yeah, it's tough, because we were talking before the show, like, there's a lot of like older veterans and there's a lot of young guys and not a lot in between. So you look at how some of the veterans are treated differently than the young guys. I mean, the young guys got to learn, but I would in this last stretch like to see them play more just in the NHL, just so they can get that experience. But I mean, you're still trying to light that fire under Reichel, and it's what, been like 3 years, and you're still trying to figure that out. So maybe that's what, I mean, Anders Sorensen's seen him a lot these last few years, because he's been down in Rockford with him. So he knows Reichel knows what he is expected of, and he didn't reach up to it. And I mean, Anders doesn't say a lot, but you could tell by how he said it, he really wasn't happy with how he was playing. So hopefully they talk about it and he can move on and be better for it. But he has gotten a lot of chances with the Hawks.
Yeah, and to be fair, his line was maybe the best line that they had going in Columbus. The Craig Smith obviously scored the goal, led all skaters in Columbus with 5 shots on net. So that line was generating chances against the Blue Jackets. But I think with Reichel, if you want him to be a long-term piece on this roster, because it's not a given that he's going to be part of the future for the Blackhawks, he's certainly going to need to elevate his game and add some more consistency. The Blackhawks did call up Colton Dock before going on this 3-game road trip. So you wonder who he might come out for, whether it's going to be a Reichel, or does Sorensen say, hey, I benched Reichel for the third period. Now I'm going to give Lucas an opportunity to respond to that in Utah versus letting him sit. So we'll see what Sorensen does when the lineup takes shape tomorrow after morning skate.
Yeah, if Colton Dock is coming up, though, I'd like to see him play and not be scratched.
Right.
Because you want to see what he can do, and he had some good moments this year when he was up with them, so hopefully he's playing a bunch.
All right, last thing to get to before our first break. It was a cool scene yesterday at the United Center. The Blackhawks honored their longtime organist, Frank Pellico, who participated, I guess it was his last game with the Blackhawks before retiring. A 33-year run with the Chicago Blackhawks, and it was really cool the way that they honored him throughout the night. During the third TV timeout, he got a really nice video tribute. During the intermissions, he was putting on a little concerts, and the fans gave him ovations for it. And it was, I think, even during some of the breaks, they would show up some graphics of Frank Pelico when he first started and just how it's evolved over the years. And so it was really cool to see the Blackhawks honor one of their greats, who not only was with the has been here with the United Center, but also at the Chicago Stadium too. Nice little send off for Frank Pelico, and a nice touch that they were able to do it against an original six team in the Toronto Maple Leafs, because I guess that was an important goal for the Blackhawks, to make sure that he got his love, original six team, just to kind of throw it back.
Yeah, and he gets to perform both anthems too, so that makes it even better. But yeah, I mean, just a legend. That's what you think about, is the organ with the Hawks and him playing it and all that stuff. And I know he's slowed that. He hasn't done like the full game the last few years, but he's always there for the anthem. And it's going to be weird hearing Gene Honda not say his name for the anthem. So yeah, that's going to be really different.
Yeah. I was saying earlier, there are three names that are synonymous to me in my mind with the in arena Blackhawks experience, both me growing up as a fan and also just as a media member since, is Gene Honda, the PA announcer, Frank Pelico, the organist, and Jim Cornelison, the national anthem singer. And so it's always Gene Honda introducing Frank Pelico sending it down to Jim Cornelison, and them being in sync. So it's like the triangle of the trifecta of all three of those. And for Gene Honda, not going to be able to say, you know, let's go over to Frank Pelico. It's certainly going to be an adjustment. Carrie does a great job, mm-hmm. and she's going to step into the full time role. But I'm sure it's going to be weird not hearing Frank's name for Blackhawks games anymore.
Yeah, a lot of change in the last few years, so it's hard. But yeah, Carrie's great, and it should be good moving forward. But yeah, it's just kind of sad end of an era, and I was hoping they could get a win for him. It didn't work out. But
I know they should have. That was the only thing that was missing. The only missing piece of Sunday was not getting Frank a win. But we wish Frank all the best in retirement. And hopefully the Blackhawks can kick off this road trip on a positive note. We're going to get to more here on Blackhawks Live. The Seth Jones obviously made some comments last Friday. Well, first of all, he did the interview with Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times. And then we heard from Seth Jones on Friday talk about his potential trade aspirations and how he's been working with Kyle Davidson and his agent to potentially facilitate something before March 7th. We'll get to that next. You're listening to Blackhawks Live on 720 WGN. Welcome back to Blackhawks Live. Charlie Meliotis and Jack Heinrich here on a Monday night. Jack, it's like 55 degrees outside. Typically, the last few times we've done this, it's been bitterly cold. But boy, we should have maybe stuck in a driving range session in earlier.
Yeah, that would have been nice. I saw a guy walking around in shorts when I got here. So.
Wow. I left my jacket in the car. I was like, I don't know if I need this right now.
No.
So
yeah, it's
good.
Nice.
So we're February 24th as we record this. So we are less than 2 weeks away from the March 7th trade deadline. And I think going into this trade deadline, there was really only one name to pay close attention to if you're the Blackhawks, was Ryan Donato, because of the season that he's been having, flirting with close to 60 points, almost a 30 goal pace. And so you figure he's going to fetch some sort of return, because his value is going to be like over exceeding what his production is, I guess. But then we saw last week, we came back from the break, and Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times had an exclusive interview with Seth Jones that basically implied Seth was working with the Blackhawks to facilitate a trade. Now, I know Ben closely, and so we had conversations about this off the record, or kind of like behind the scenes. And like originally, I thought maybe Seth wasn't aware that this story was going to be as big as it was when it did get tweeted, because Ben, I mean, I think it got like almost like a million views, like almost a million impressions on the tweet. And so Hawks had that was on Wednesday. Hawks had an off day on Thursday. They returned to practice on Friday, and obviously the media scrum flocked towards Seth Jones's stall.
Massive.
Yeah, big scrum. And so I thought, okay, maybe Seth might walk back his comments, because sometimes maybe he just didn't intend for them to come out that way. And he doubled down on it. There was no backtracking at all. It was, his direct quote was, we're trying to push the needle, like trying to get this thing to happen before the March 7th trade deadline. And so my initial reaction was I was a little bit surprised because I can't remember the last time someone that had 5 years left on a contract after this year that basically informally has publicly requested a trade. Maybe he didn't say it outright, but that was he was implying that the hope would be to facilitate a deal, right? And so I can't remember. It's a different situation where if it's like a pending UFA or got a year or two left on the contract and you're saying, we're not going the same direction. But it's crazy to hear how public he was. First of all, appreciate the transparency as someone that's kind of like in the media. And so there's no kind of sugarcoating where it is. And let me first say this too. I do feel sorry for Seth Jones from the standpoint of he really wanted to come to Chicago and sign a long-term deal. Like this was the team that he wanted to sign a long-term deal with if he was going to get traded. It was Chicago or Dallas, but Dallas wasn't feasible. And so when he did get traded to Chicago, the Blackhawks were still, they were at a point where they wanted to the upward trajectory to they wanted to, they weren't going to rebuild. It was acquiring Marc-Andre Fleury and acquiring Tyler Johnson and acquiring all, and reacquiring Andrew Shaw, all these pieces that they wanted to take the next step after kind of like a retool on the fly. And when Kyle Davidson takes over, it's just immediately tear down, rebuild from day one. And so this is obviously not what he signed up for. And so I don't fault him whatsoever for feeling like this timeline isn't going to line up with his personal preferences. But here's what I will say, and this is going to be the challenge of it among many other challenges within it with the no movement clause, the salary, whatever, is I'm not sure the Blackhawks are going to be in a rush to make a deal of this magnitude and just get Seth off the books because the Hawks, Artem Levchinov, Sam Renzel, those two defensemen, ideally, on the next great Blackhawks team, are going to be anchoring the right side of the blue line on the first and second pairing for many years to come. But they're still years away from being impactful type NHL players. Renzel hasn't even turned pro yet, right? He still is a sophomore at Minnesota. And so you wonder, if you're Chicago, I'm not sure you want, there's a desperation level to pull the trigger on a deal for Seth Jones just to get rid of him. And with the salary cap growing exponentially over the next 3 years, there's not going to be a sense of urgency for the Blackhawks to have to retain a large percentage of salary, if at all. Like if I'm Kyle Davidson, I'm doing everything in my power that if a deal does come to fruition for Seth Jones, it requires zero salary retention. And I'm just thinking about this on the fly. Maybe you try to get a third team involved to eat some of the salary instead of the Chicago retaining. If you get a third party involved, because the salary cap is going to be increasing exponentially over the next few years, maybe there's a team out there that would be willing to eat some of the contract for through the end of the 2030 season just to help them get to the salary cap floor, because it's going to be a challenge for some of these teams to really get to the floor, especially if you're a smaller market team where you're not even going to spend close to the cap, let alone the floor. And so it's a fascinating conversation that we're having, one that I didn't think we would be having, but because Seth Jones went public with it, it's a conversation that a lot of people around the league are going to have between now and the March 7 trade deadline.
Yeah. It is funny that you're like, oh, he might walk it back. And then he's like, nah, like, I'm not really. He hasn't like formally said, like, I want to get out of here. But right. Like, he basically, like, he said it without saying it. Yeah. But it is interesting because I think the Hawks want to avoid retaining because don't they? They only have three slots, and I think two of them are already full.
Yeah. I understand that part of it. Like, yeah. Maybe they want to keep a spot open for, you know, if they retain on someone else. But I think because the contract is so long, it's like by 29-30 season is the final year of the Seth Jones contract. The Hawks want to be competing by that point, right? So you don't want to have X million dollars tied up in salary retention when it could prevent you from going out and paying bigger fish on the market over the next couple years. And you got to pay Connor Bedard and Artem Levchinov and Frank Nazar. All these guys are going to be due. I know it's not really going to overlap too much, but Kyle Davidson has made it clear he wants financial flexibility, because the second you get rid of that, when you tie up a lot of money to players, you can't get that salary cap relief back. And so I just don't know if it would be the right thing to do to start where the playoff window is opening and you have $2 to $3 million or whatever it is already tied up in dead money.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with it. Like, you said it, 5 years left. That's kind of crazy. I think you see that more in like basketball, where stars kind of force their way out if they still have a long-term deal. But it is interesting. He's not really forcing his way out. And Teuvo Teravainen talked after, like, can a trade request like fracture the locker room? And he kind of shut it down and said no. But if they continue to lose, then you start asking questions. You could see. But at the end of his scrum, he asked, I think Scott Powers from The Athletic asked him, like, if you end up staying, like, do you think they're on the right path? And he's like, yeah, I think they're on the right path. Like, you can see the vision. It's just like, I'm not on the same timeline. So I think he wants to win now, and the Hawks are in win in two or three years, hopefully. So, it's a weird situation, because he was brought in by the old regime, and now it's a new regime. So it's always weird when that – you always have, like, your guys, like – when you get like a new regime, you're like, oh, they want to get our guys, our draft picks. Like, that's why you always think some guys are who were drafted by an old regime can be available, because they weren't their guys. So, I mean, it is a weird crossover, but it is interesting to follow, because we talked about this, I don't know, like a month ago. We're like, oh, maybe it could happen, you know, because he was on like that list of trade candidates. But now there's actually a little juice behind it, and it'll be interesting to watch in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and this was a calculated decision by Seth to go public with this, because it would have been easy for him to try to facilitate it behind the scenes, but for him to go public with it and then double down on it feels strategic by his camp. And another interesting part of the equation is after next season. So his actual salary the first year was $10 million. Years 2 and 3, $12.5 million. Then next year will be year 4 of his contract. It drops to $10.5 million. And then in the final 4 years, it's $8 million, $7.5, $7.5, $7.5. So you basically get Seth Jones at a $9.5 million cap hit, but you would only be paying him $8 million in year 5, and then $7.5 in years 6 to 8. So again, if you're smaller market team where maybe money could be tight and you're looking for guys that have a higher cap hit but it's less cash, that could be an option. I know Seth's preference would be to go to a Stanley Cup contender, but it would be really hard for teams to do that, because if you're a Stanley Cup contender, you probably don't have a lot of cap space. Honestly, the two teams that really come to my mind that actually might be able to make it work is, ironically, the Dallas Stars, because they Tyler Seguin's on LTIR because of his injury, and Miro Heiskanen, who's their prized defenseman, is on a week-to-week timeline before the Four Nations break, and it sounds like he could miss the rest of the regular season. And so if that's $9-plus million opened up by Dallas, I don't know if there would be a scenario where Dallas can make the money work, not only for this year, but next year. I know they have guys to pay, and so it could get complicated. But the other team I was thinking about was the Florida Panthers, where, you know, we were talking about it just before, how Matthew Tkachuk has what's believed to be a groin injury that could cost him the rest of the regular season. Paul Maurice was on the Florida Panthers head coach was on a radio show this morning and was clear that Tkachuk is going to play again this year. I'm not sure if that meant playoffs or regular season, but if there's a scenario where, I know Florida's been looking for a right-hand shot D for a while, and you got Aaron Ekblad's contract expiring, I'm not sure if they're going to pay Sam Bennett. If not, that paves the way for them to potentially trade for Seth Jones. I don't know. Those are the two true Stanley Cup contenders that can probably make it work. If it's not those teams, you're going to have to, if Seth really wants to get out of here before March 7th, he would have to be open to going to maybe a team that's on the bubble of the playoffs, but has a better long-term outlook, or they have a long-term outlook where they can be competitive for years to come while also being able to make the money work.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, like, with the Hawks being in Columbus, Seth's former team, Zach Werenski was asked about it, and yeah, he basically said he would want to play with them again. So I don't know if he's open to that. They're right on the bubble, like you said. They're fighting with the Red Wings for that last wild card spot. But, I mean, they asked Seth about it, too, and his quotes were on social media. And he said, yeah, I mean, I love playing with him. Like, he's one of my good buddies. I think he had dinner with them the night before. Yep. So I don't know if he goes back there, but like, I mean, that it was just kind of, to me, I didn't get to this on the post game. It was kind of interesting that players on both sides, like Columbus and Chicago, are pretty open about like, oh yeah, you know, I love Seth. And I mean, they're friends and all, but like, it is refreshing to see like, yeah, like I'd love to have him over instead of just mirroring, like towing the line, you know?
Right. Yeah. And to be clear, Seth is a very good hockey player. He's just probably a million and a half over value, mm-hmm. right? So it's not like the Hawks. Like, if you're the Hawks, like I've seen the hypothetical scenarios where it's like the Hawks, if you retain half of the Seth Jones contract and crunch that number down to like 4.75 million or whatever, yeah, the Hawks could probably get a massive haul for that, because that's a $4.75 million for Seth Jones over the next 5 years after this year. Is a really good number, and the Hawks would probably be able to get a fairly hefty package. The problem is the Hawks probably don't have any desire to maximize their package for in a Seth Jones trade. I think they far prefer the financial cap flexibility. So I think they'd do everything in their power to move the entire contract versus retaining as much as possible and getting the largest return, because they've already had a bunch of first round picks and they got prospects in the pipeline. So I'm not sure that's going to really factor into the decision for the Blackhawks. Forgot to get to our Hawks click poll. Yeah. That's the will the Blackhawks trade Seth Jones before the March 7th trade deadline? 57% say no, 43% say yes. I think I would be shocked if this happened before March 7th. Like, this feels like a really hard deal to make in the middle of the season, especially with the term of the contract and you have the full no movement clause. It's more likely than not this gets done in an off season. I'm not even sure it's guaranteed to get done this off season. Again, you would have to convince the Blackhawks they can find suitable replacements in the near future just to bridge the gap between now and when Artem Levchinov and Sam Renzel are ready to take on those roles on the right side. But it's going to be a fascinating storyline to follow leading into March 7th to just see how much behind the scenes pushing the needle, quote unquote, there will be from Seth Jones' camp, and whether the Blackhawks are going to get some sort of value for him, and also if they're able to move the entire contract.
Yeah, I also said, no, this feels way too complex to do in 2 weeks, especially if they want to get like a third team involved, like you said, maybe just raise their floor. But it's a lot of projecting 5 years out, and I don't know if someone's going to want to do that like in the middle of a season, maybe make a quick decision, because he could help you this year, but then you have the 5 year and you're not sure what your money looks like. It does seem complex, but yeah, an off-season deal seems more likely. And I think the Hawks, just the way Kyle Davidson is, would want to get that full money off, because, I mean, like you said, they have all these young guys. We talked a few weeks ago about the options coming off the books, and, I mean, they're trying to get Jake Guentzel. It didn't work out. So I think they're trying to get a star, and if they could get that financial flexibility, I think you're right, they would prefer that. And that's just Kyle Davidson's preference, and that I think that's the way he's gone, and that's the way that he's done the rebuild so far, and it doesn't seem like he's going to change off it.
Yeah, so let's hypothetically say Dallas and Florida might not be able to make the money work. Like, a team that I could see potentially, this is hypothetical, I'm not even saying it might come to fruition, but like if you're the Minnesota Wild and you're also the Blackhawks, like is there a scenario where you can go to Minnesota and say, we'll give you Seth Jones, you give us Jared Spurgeon, who's their captain? The problem with that is he's 35 years old. He's their captain, but also he has a modified no trade clause, which is a 10 team no trade list. Chicago might be on it given where they are in the standings, but it's like that would have to be the type of deal to make the money work if you're a contender like Minnesota, or kind of like in that lesser tier than the Dallas's or Florida's. Is like the Hawks would have to take a contract back. Obviously, that's, I'm not saying straight up Spurgeon for Seth Jones. It would be a surrounding pieces of like the Hawks getting prospects in return as well, or picks or whatever the case might be. But saying like, if you get a guy like Spurgeon, you can plug him in on the right side and he can at least fill the gap in the short term while the Hawks figure it out. So just kind of spitballing. It's not going to happen likely, but that's the kind of framework that would have to happen for the Blackhawks to make a deal of this magnitude work. We got one more break here to get to on Blackhawks Live. Then we're going to wrap up with some Four Nations talk. What a tournament that was. That a record-setting ratings for ESPN in the NHL. And Jack and I will share our thoughts on the overall tournament coming up next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, Charlie Romeliotis and Jack Heinrich with you. Jack, what an electric week and a half it was for the Four Nations tournament. Even just the casual hockey fan that was watching, I feel like I was getting a lot of texts from non-hockey fans that were like, are you watching USA Canada? And it was, I will admit, leading into the tournament, I wasn't overly hyped about it until I actually saw the lines coming in for Team Canada and Team USA. And I was like, wow, this should be cool, interesting. But when the NHL season was going on, I was kind of like, okay, cool. Like, I'm interested to see how this goes, because it's not like an Olympics or a World Cup of hockey where you can kind of, you have something to draw on. So when I was watching the Four Nations tournament, boy, that was a lot of pent up emotion by the players of going 10 plus years without participating in international best on best hockey. And it far exceeded my expectations. And I think probably gained a lot of casual fans in the process. And hopefully that carries into the Stanley Cup playoffs of fans watching.
Yeah, I think the Tkachuk brothers are everybody's favorite in the U.S. now. Yeah. But yeah, it was great. I mean, just watching it, I mean, the fights were good. I mean, there's a little outside noise too with the anthems and stuff, so that built into it, and the group chat, the fight and whatnot. I mean, it was cool. The end game, I mean, for the American side was tough, because I mean, you leave McDavid, that's normally what happens. I think they gained a lot of new fans, especially having like that NBA Saturday night on with Canada USA. I think they outdrew them a lot. And it just being a dead period kind of for sports helped them a lot. So hopefully teams or people are still checking in. I mean, they got a lot of national games coming up. Maybe they could play into like the McDavid and the Tkachuks playing when they come back and all that kind of stuff. And, I think a lot of people are excited for the Olympics too next year. That's a good lead into it.
Oh, absolutely. It was a great lead into it. A great kind of a hype session for it. I think in the first USA-Canada game on the Saturday night, the three fights in 9 seconds, there were like 5 million viewers in the United States watching. So it was incredible numbers to see. And then when you saw the ESPN numbers trickle in for the championship game, 9.3 million viewers watched USA-Canada. And so,
and it peaked at over 10.
Did it actually? Yeah. I didn't see that.
It peaked
Wow.
over 10, yeah.
And yeah, unfortunately for the Americans, Connor McDavid scores the game winner for Team Canada. Boy, Team USA had so many chances in the shifts prior.
All over them.
Jordan Binnington, I just can't figure out as a goaltender. He gives up a lot of softies in like regular season or whatever, but when the game matters, he is a big-time goaltender. And so tough result for Team USA, but overall for the sport of hockey, a huge win to help grow the sport. So that's going to do it for this edition of Blackhawks Live.